This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Is it strange? I'll call you. How do you think? And that I might forget all love. It's radiating further away.
You're with the priest, the poem, and the poof on the Spirit Lounge, the show that explores sexuality and spirituality for our community.
And good evening and welcome to Spirit Lounge. And again, there is only two of us.
That's right, there's the poof and the priest.
Yes, and the poem is over in West Australia, terrorising them in Margaret River, no doubt.
Probably, just, you know, experimenting with their fine wines, I imagine.
Oh, yes, be lots of wine tasting, I imagine, happening there. A big thanks to Roundup, and our first track tonight was the beautiful voice of Keith Green with Until That Final Day. And what are we talking about tonight?
We are talking a little bit about heaven and those sorts of things and what happens.
What happens when we die? Well, that sounds a bit scary.
So you, during the week, you managed to catch up with Andrew?
Yes, Andrew Dotney is the principal of the Uniting College for Leadership and Theology in Adelaide. He's also the associate professor at the School of Theology at Flinders University. He teaches and writes on theology and ethics, and he is also the president-elect for the Uniting Church in Australia, a position he takes up in 2012. And
let's listen a little bit to
What
he had to say.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking tonight about life after death, and we're talking about your book, Food, Sex and Death, which was a book that I did a book review on when I was doing, way back when I was doing my theology degree. And I was interested that at the beginning of the section on death in your book, you actually talk about a revelation you had on a tram, and that that was our body and our bodily life and our personal history really cannot be separated from us. Can you explain what that means? Because I think that's really important to what you later talk about, your belief.
Yeah, I think what it was at the time, and this was a long time ago that I wrote that book, but what it was at the time, I guess, was the realization that my bodily states affect quite profoundly my feelings and my sense of self and moods and all of those more ethereal things sometimes merge into areas of soul and spirituality, at the same time intimately linked with my body. So, what's a good example? Well, frankly, just getting tired. When I'm tired, the world is a different kind of place to me, and I'm a different kind of person to the world and to my nearest and dearest. Whereas when I'm rested, there's another me that emerges and can do things. And add to that the sorts of results that come from, say, a brain injury or something like that, where a person's sense of self and way of relating to others can be profoundly changed by a physical event in that person's body.
Yeah. And in the light of this, can you just talk a little bit about what you believe happens to us when we die?
Well, when we die, I think when one's body dies, that's it. That's the full stop of that sense of self. So one of the things that I came to be convinced about was that there the survival of one's own death is a kind of it's a sort of nonsense to think that we can survive without a body, and I think that's a biblical idea. But before the letters and emails start rolling in, I come out of that with a much stronger sense of what resurrection means. So for me, I'm convinced about a post-mortem existence, but not as a continuation of this life, rather as a quite specific and intentional and powerful recreation of the self by God. So in the book, I explored that using the metaphor of memory and the way in which a community in remembering their dead doesn't give them up to nothingness, but and I spoke specifically about loved ones that I'd lost and the way in which they remained, continued to be real to me, even though they were no longer real to themselves because they are quite dead. But their reality to me was very powerful. So I'd still be interacting with them in my imagination. They'd come to me in dreams. I'd hear their voice occasionally in the turn of phrase that somebody else used. All those kind of ways in which our dead remain real to us. But then, in reflecting on this theologically, I wondered to myself, what are we to God when we die? And I proposed the idea that we remain real to God after we've died and ceased to be real to ourselves. But then theologically, to be real to God is to be real, full stop. And so it's in that kind of continuing to be real to the God who made us and loves us and refuses to give us up to death that I see a possibility of conceiving how it can be that a person can live after they've died.
You talk about, at one point, about our spirit. Our body becomes compost and our spirit returns to God. Mm. Is that, you know, we hear a lot about reincarnation from some quarters. Could that be used as an argument for reincarnation? If that spirit's used again by God?
Well, I think I was using that's biblical language from the Old Testament, the Hebrew Scriptures, where the idea is that what a human being is animated dust, that we come from the dust, we're animated by the breath of God being within us, and when we die, that breath returns to God, not as our individuated selves, but just as that life force. Now, in my book and in my own theological thinking, I haven't taken that very far. Personally, I don't hold to a view of reincarnation. Probably more on I guess more on moral grounds than on metaphysical grounds. In that, I think one of the important things about Christian anthropology is the significance and uniqueness of each individual creature being created and loved by God, and if the crucial part of oneself is if you like handed down from body to body, that relativizes the uniqueness and preciousness of the embodied self that you are at the time. So I'm not attracted in any way to a belief in reincarnation.
Joy 94.9, Gold Star Radio.
You're on Joy 94.9. You're in the Spirit Lounge with Joy and Andrew. If you're interested in what we've been talking about, make sure that you do join in with the conversation. You can text us in 0427-JOY949 or email onair@joy.org.au.
And we're talking about life after death with Andrew Dutney. So we're going to play part two of the interview now.
My mum died recently, and last Monday, in fact, I was over in New Zealand at the funeral.
Yeah.
And they talked in the funeral about what she'd be remembered for, and we had done this as a family a couple of days earlier. And for mum, she was very quiet, and she was aunt to so many people.
Mm.
But I wonder if, thinking on that, if because in society we're so focused on ourselves as individuals rather than on us as being part of a community, that contributes to our need to believe in a life after death, in the fact that we go to heaven or, you know, there's something better for us.
Well, I mean, in theory that makes sense, but it runs against the... I guess the historical data, and that is that belief in life after death seems to be much more universal in cultures that are much less individualistic than our own.
Right.
So the individualism of capitalist culture that we experience it seems to go hand in hand with a loss of interest in the afterlife and a loss of commitment to that as an important idea, whereas in earlier cultures that are much more communal and a sense of the self being in relationship to those around oneself, in those communities there's a more vivid sense of the continuity of the living and the dead in community.
Well, that's interesting. What was the reaction when this book came out?
Well, I got, I must say, extreme reactions on both sides. As you may be aware, I wrote the book at a time of profound grieving of my own. So I was in a very dark and painful place, and I you lose filters in those situations, and so I didn't censor myself very much, and I said a lot of outrageous things in the book, or at least I said things in outrageous ways probably self-consciously confronting ways. But the thing that that really garnered a reaction was what I said about death and life after death. And I was very struck by the passion with which people who thought I was saying there is no life after death took offence at that and took me to task. And it really made me stop and think, well, maybe this is something that's more important to people than I realised. Leaving aside the fact that they'd misunderstood my point, I wasn't saying there's no life after death. I was trying to give a different explanation of how that could be thought about. Even then in the early 90s when the book was published, there was a broad part of the community that remains passionately committed to a sense of life after death, and I'd have to say too that I'm a bit older than that now, quite a lot older in fact than I was then, and with the years I think I'd deal with those matters a little more gently, just with the experience of my own ongoing grieving for people and subsequent losses. There's a sense in which I'm much less confident than I used to be that I know what's going on around me.
Have you ever thought about putting out another revised edition?
I have thought about that, and I've been asked to do it from time to time, but there's a sense in which it's a timepiece. It comes from a particular time in my life, and I find it difficult to go back and read it, in fact, because that time comes back to me so vividly. Which I guess means it was reasonably well written, so I don't want to muck around with it. But I have returned to the matter of death and grief quite frequently in the time since then. I have a recent book that was published earlier this year that includes a chapter that began life, in fact, as a sermon at a child's funeral. But I've been interested in reviewers of the book, and people who have spoken to me about the book come back to that chapter really consistently. In fact, it's quite predictable. That's the one people want to talk to me about. It's such a big part of life, death, and particularly the death of the people we love.
Yeah, and I sometimes think it's interesting that my mum's funeral was at a Pentecostal church that her and Dad attended. Mm-hmm. And we were waiting for the hearse, and people kept on coming up and saying, "Isn't it wonderful your mother's in a better place?" And my sister actually got quite angry and said, "Well, better place for who?" And then during the service, and then again at the cemetery, we kept on hearing, "Well, she's gone to this mansion in the sky that's been prepared for her." And as I looked around those people, I wondered that sometimes we use this belief that we're going to meet again, and that, and they talk a lot about that, to not deal with the pain of the loss now. Because it seemed to me,
I think you're probably right that there are unexamined things that we hear said about death that really are an avoidance of the pain that we're feeling, and I don't think that helps anyone. Finding a way to be really honest in the face of death is important, because we don't get these opportunities very often. You know, what I think is going on is that the line between life and death is so fine, it's almost not there. We talk about the fragility of life, but even that feels like a bit of a cliche. It's the utter improbability that we've survived as long as we have as individuals and as peoples. So with recent tragedies in New Zealand and in Japan, we see the way how suddenly in the matter of moments, thousands of lives can just be swept away, gone, done. But then that is shocking, it's horrifying, except in any crowd that you want to look at, you're looking at a crowd of people who are going to die. We all do. But you can't live constantly in that acute state of awareness of our mortality and our fragility, and especially the mortality of those we love. So when there is a bereavement, I think it's a crucial moment to spend just a little while in the face of the reality of how extraordinarily blessed we are to have this moment of living and breathing, and to just see it against the background of the loss of someone we loved, to see it and think about it and sit with it for a while, and then go back to living the life that you can bear, which is just not thinking about how fragile it all is. There's a sense in which the advice to live each day as though it was your last is not very good advice. You'd go nuts if you were doing that. You'd go crazy.
And we're talking with Andrew Dutney about life after death. Our next track is a fantastic one from Melissa Etheridge called The Kingdom of Heaven, from an amazing album called The Awakening.
A suffering soul on the way to the kingdom of heaven held up a sign that said God hates America.
Real Voices, Real Good Radio, Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9 in the Spirit Lounge. We're catching up with Andrew Dutney tonight. If you'd like to join the conversation, please text us in
at 0427 join 949, or email onair@joy.org.au.
To be interested in finally talking about, you know, if we were to change our view on life after death, and to say, okay, that we, you know, there's not a heaven or whatever else people sort of cling on to, how do you think that would affect the way we live today?
That's a good question. It's hard to generalise about these things because it would affect different people in different ways. If for example, I was relying on the idea of a life after death to make up for all the things that I'm not getting around to in this life, so, you know, I don't have to invest that time in learning to play the piano now because there'll be plenty of time in heaven for that sort of thing later on. If I were doing that sort of thing, then to lose the idea of a life after death would make the present much more important, and it would force me to prioritise better than I do the way I do spend this life that I've got to lead. but if the sense of a life after death was a sustaining and encouraging thing for me, I had lost lots of people who were precious to me, were left feeling quite lonely and isolated. The loss of a sense of their continuing relationship with me, even after death, might cause me to think that this life isn't worth leading anymore. Because one of the things I did argue quite strongly in that chapter was that in many ways we are our relationships. And when those are torn away from us, the very sense of who we are as people can disappear with it.
And if there's no, hanging on to that life after death, then maybe our relationships with God and with others become more important now that we make the most of them.
Well, as I said, for some people that could very well be the case. If we're not relying on a life after death, then we invest more in the present. I see people who function that way very effectively. I also see a lot of people who are working off a smaller resource base than others. It may be having fewer resources in terms of people around them, or it might be that they are experiencing significant social disadvantage, poverty. It may be that the life they have here and now is basically pretty awful. In those circumstances, I certainly don't begrudge them the comfort of a sense of the afterlife that's imagined in those traditional ways. I think John Lennon got it right. If whatever gets you through the night sometimes is the right thing to be working with.
Maybe what happens is what we believe. Who knows?
Well, I don't know. I've been thinking about grief more recently too. In the book I use the metaphor of memory to talk about the way in which the dead can be retained in relationship to the living. But I've been thinking a bit more recently about the experience of the phantom limb. Not that I have that experience, but I'm aware of others who have had. And when we think of the way we're constituted through our relationships, it's like we become limbs of one another, you know, with all the nerve endings reaching out and sending messages back and forth and all the rest of it. And when one of those limbs is torn away, when someone you love is dies and is no longer there, there can be a very powerful sense of that phantom limb where the nerve endings are all still heading in that direction and finding and imagining the reality of that person. But their experience as being present and absent with a tremendous pain but with a great reality at the same time. I'm not sure where that metaphor is going to get me in the longer term, but it's one that I've been sitting with for a while.
I think whatever else, for me, Food, Sex and Death is a fabulous book in that it does generate discussion about these things and good, boisterous, interesting discussion.
Yes, and I've come to value that more and more over the years. In fact, the book that I mentioned was recently published. It's called Backyard Theology, and the subtitle is Conversation Starters in Faith, Life and Leadership. And it's a series of more than 20 short chapters on loosely related themes. But they're all designed to do that, to give people a place to start a conversation about something significant, without determining what the end of that conversation will be. And the feedback so far is that, given the opportunity, people actually like to talk about big stuff.
Well, yeah, I quite agree, especially over a bottle of wine or two. I think it makes for fabulous discussion.
Yeah.
I'm at the moment revisiting the way we actually should do church, and I'm sort of moving away from the actual building to maybe, you know, a place where you meet for a meal and meet to have discussions.
That's a novel idea, church around a meal, gosh.
Yeah, I know. It's not been done before.
That's right. Yeah. I don't think it's any accident that the central ritual of Christianity is the bread and wine. But I think it's a very disappointing accident that we've reduced that to such a stylized thing, that the sense of actually being together and eating and being fed and having that hospitality extended is quite hard to imagine now.
Yeah, and rather than sitting listening to someone pontificate, to actually be involved in the discussion and be... Yeah, I think it's a much better idea to me. Well, thank you very much, Andrew, for being a part of the Spirit Lounge. And book again is Backyard Theology, and
yes,
available from all good bookstores, or...?
It's published by Mediacom.
Right,
and I think it's it's available online.
Okay,
to be purchased online. Yeah.
Fabulous! I want to get a copy of that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
You're on Joy 94.9 in the Spirit Lounge. We've been talking to Andrew Dutney today about what just happens to us after we die. Lots of interesting kind of ideas there. If you'd like to share with us what your ideas are, 0427 joy949, that's the text number, or you can email onair@joy.org.au. We've got a bit of a track coming up now, which is entitled Journey. It's from a band called The Warrior Poets, and it's kind of a bit of a, takes us on a journey through life.
All voices, our voices.
Joy 94.9.
And that was Rebecca St. James with Breathe. That's a beautiful song, isn't it?
Oh, it's amazing. I started playing, I just threw the CD in the player and I was like, oh, this song, I love this song.
Yeah, you said you listened to it on another radio station. We won't talk about that one.
Look, where I live, Joy doesn't have amazing reception, so...
No, I've moved, as you know.
Yes.
So... I was very disappointed when I was driving out there, and it's not that far away, really. It seems like it, but it's not. And the radio was crackling, and I thought, oh, no, this is sad. But then I put on the radio in the kitchen, and I got Joy, so I was very excited about that.
I figured out that I can listen to Joy through the internet radio on my computer or on my smartphone. So I've been doing that a little bit, but when I'm out and about in the car... Not so easy.
So do we have like podcasts or whatever so that people, if they miss us, can catch up? And
Yes, we do. You can find them if you head on over to our, we've got a Facebook page, like a Facebook group. So you can search for Spirit Lounge on Joy 949 and our group will pop up and you can join in the conversation there. We also do have a bit of a website-y blog kind of thing. The website for that is spiritlounge949.weebly.com, or also you can go to joy.org.au and kind of follow the links through to us. So there's a few options there, and you can listen on air.
I found Andrew Dutney, or Dutney, very interesting. What did you think of what he had to say tonight?
He was great, actually, and I'm really glad that we were able to catch up with him. I'm sorry that I missed it, most of the action.
Some have to work. Some people have to work.
Yes. I thought that what he had to say was really kind of interesting and challenging, and it was interesting to note that he did kind of say, well, this one particular chapter of this book keeps coming up. It's an issue that people keep wanting to talk about, so I guess it's something that I should think about a bit more, because it is something that people are talking about. Personally, I kind of guess I have fairly youthy kind of views on the subject. I haven't really thought about death.
Like it doesn't happen.
Well, not that it doesn't happen, but just that it seems so far away for me.
Yeah.
So I haven't given it much thought, but I was kind of thinking about it, about how maybe the concept of heaven is really like an ultimate goal that we're trying to aim to while we're here on earth, like trying to build communities and such so that it resembles something of the heaven, I guess, the concept of heaven. What do you think?
Well, I like the idea that if there is no life after death in the way that we've actually been taught, we go to heaven, like they said about my mother, she's gone to this mansion in the sky, and my thinking was, well, she'd hate to live in a mansion. It's just not her. She'd rather a little cottage.
Yeah, then I'm not really sure the mansion would be my style.
No, but then it takes away from this thing of, the chosen one. Some people are chosen in some religions, they believe. Or we've got to jump through all these hoops if we're going to get to heaven. I think it takes all that away, and I like that. It has everyone on an equal playing field, and it doesn't matter. It's not about whether you're Christian or whether you're Muslim or what it is that you are, that you're all equal. And so we all live on in the community in which we exist. And I like that about it. I think that's really neat.
It's certainly challenging, I guess, to some of the traditional interpretations.
Yeah.
Anyway, if you want to join in the conversation, we will kind of be carrying on. Join us on the Facebook group, which we mentioned earlier. Just search for Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, or you can follow the links through to our website, and you can leave comments up there if you wish.
Now we're going to go.
Yeah, it's about all we've got time for tonight. Our last track is one by Stephen Curtis Chapman, who is one of my favourite artists at the moment. So we'll leave you with him.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.